So we had talked about what Tesvav, the fascinating Gzeirah Shavah, which continues to intrigue and to mystify a little bit because there's so much to figure out. We tried to frame the whole thing within one umbrella kind of question. Does Tesvav connect Yom Tovim, or does it connect mitzvahs? Does it tell us that Pesach and Sukkot are linked with a common obligation of Achila? Or does it connect these two headliner mitzvahs of Sukkah and Matzah and make them into Chiyuvim the first night? So there's another question to explore a little bit, which I'd like to do today. And that has to do with what is the impact on the rest of Yontif? Right, so what's the language of the Shulchan Aruch, right, that I gave you to look at? Right, the language of the Shulchan Aruch is Achila b'sukkah v'leil yantif harishon chova, filo achal kizayis pas yatsi dey chavaso, mikan ve'eilach rishos, ratza lechal sukkah soid b'sukkah, ratza eino achal kol zayin ala peiris v'kloyis chutzal v'chka ochel, gedin achilos matzah b'pesach. So, what does that say? What does that language, Rishus, mean? Does that mean that essentially it's irrelevant from a mitzvah perspective? It's all just about not doing that? But there's no mitzvah at all? Right, so we have discussed recently how the word putter can mean a lot of different things and a lot of different degrees. So too, the word Rishus can mean a lot of different things. The Gemara is explicit about this, actually. When it comes to Pater, you have to figure it out from seeing how sugyas contrast with each other. The word Rishus, the Gemara is explicit that Rishus means different things, mitzvah means different things, depending on what we are comparing it to. So, what do we mean here when we say Rishus, the rest of sugyas? So Mishnah Berurah, if you got a chance to see, right, the Mishnah Berurah brings up the following question. That there is a well-known position of the Gra that maintains, this is the Sefer Ma'aseh Rav, it's quoted in many places, that matzah for the rest of Pesach is more than just a dietary choice or the result of limited dietary choices. But that matzah, there is a mitzvah. It's not an obligation the way it is the first night, but there is a mitzvah fulfillment.
It's not like a mitzvah.
Right. So it's an actual mitzvah. So the question the Mishnah Berurah raises is that also true about Sukkah? Or should we say that just like the Gra tells us when it comes to matzah, it's true on some other level throughout the Yontif. So should we say, why is this night different from all other nights? So is it different from the other nights of the festival? A little bit. So is that different from Sukkot? Doesn't fit as well into the Niggad. But it's the same basic idea. So what's the contrast here? So should we assume that when it comes to Sukkot, there is a similar kind of idea, that there is a mitzvah not just the first night, but throughout there's also something? So what do you think? What's your initial reaction to that? Yes, Yisrael?
By Sukkot, though, it seems to be that we don't have a mitzvah to do it. We have a mitzvah to not eat outside. So it's more of, I guess it's more of making sure you don't do that. Yeah, let's call it an avera of some sort.
Well, you're kind of touching upon the question, I guess. So are you asserting that with confidence, or are you saying that, like, do you know that that's true, or is that really just connected to what we're trying to figure out?
I mean, to me it seems that there's no mitzvah specifically to go in the sukkah for the rest of the day. It's more to make sure you don't eat out of the sukkah.
So how do you know that? And that's part of what we need to figure out here, because you're clearly right that they're related. The question is, you'll forgive me, it sounds like maybe you're just restating our question because they're related. So essentially you're restating our question or stating an important, I don't mean to minimize it, but the question is, do we know that that's true? I have here, by the way, I forget where it is, I also had conveniently Xerox. I think I've mentioned in the past, I must have mentioned the Sefer of Arucham Olshan on Moadim. I mentioned him this year. It's a Sefer called Yarech HaMoadim, which is a beautiful, beautiful Sefer, really. I like a lot of Svarim, but I really like this Sefer. And both, he has very nice Shurim, and he has very nice Drush also, both very, very nice. He is one of the Rashi Yeshiva of Lakewood. So you may have heard the name. And he's also related to Elshin of Tara Shraga, so if that name is familiar, that's another reason. But so it's far from, like, very much. So I just brought with today that he has this discussion in his Sefer on Sukkot, although as he references here, it's also discussed in a Sefer on Pesach because it's relevant to both the Yom Tovim. But so he has this discussion. And so if you, the reference is, just making note of the reference here, so essentially the Gra is based on the language of the Gemara in Pesachim Adaf Kuf Chaf, that there the Gemara says, Tani Kavase Darabba, Sheish Es Yom Tochol Matzos, Ov Yom HaShvi Atzeres LaShem Elokecha. That's the Pasuk in Rei. So asks the Gemara, Mashvi Rishos, Av Sheish Es Yom Rishos. And so, just like the seventh day, it's not a mitzvah, it's a Rishos, so too the 6 days. Yachal aflayla harishon rishos, so maybe you might think also the first day. Talmud lomar be'erev tochlu matzos. Hakasuv kavol chova. So, seeing the psukim in balance, that's how the Gemara tells us that for the rest of Pesach, matzah is a rishos. And the first night, it is a chova because of erev tochlu matzos. And then we already seen that tesvav, tesvav means that it's a sukkos as well. So, how would you read that, Gemara? So, again, we don't know how to read the word Rishos. It means different things in different contexts. So, essentially, this is the Chiddush of the Gra. The Gra's Chiddush is that you shouldn't read Rishos simply as non-mitzvah, simply as halachically neutral, but rather you should see it as a relative term. That the first night is a chiyuv, and the other days is not a chiyuv, but not that it's halachically neutral. And now you could have read the Gemara differently. You could have read it as literally neutral. So the chiddush that's associated with the Gra is that no, that there is an affirmative value to eating matzah throughout. Okay, so far so good. So the Mishnah, yes, sir.
You said that the first night is a chova,
right,
and the rest are not what?
Are not a chiyuv.
Meaning they're not
a lola. Meaning that there's something valuable, but they're not obligatory. And that's a chiddush because it's not obvious. The word rishus, if we just read that Gemara by itself, we could have read it to mean that there is no mitzvah, that it's halachically neutral. Do whatever you want. It's actually what the word rishus sounds like, right? Do whatever you want. It's up to you. You have rishus. Do whatever you want. But the Gra's Chiddush is that no, it's only meant to contrast with Chova, that the first night is a Chova, and the other days are not a Chiyuv, but there's something valuable.
And in terms of like the question of like whether you have a obligation the rest of the days and you're sick, just the king of Sukkah, it seems like from the Gemara comes that, like, you buy Achal, you buy Loach, and if you want to go extreme, saying you can fast, like, normally, the Gemara and all the Rishonim don't seem to mention anything about an extra, like, actual value of eating.
So on the surface, I think you are right that if you're looking just at that Gemara, two steps. One, you're right that it doesn't seem like it's telling you anything more. Although Iboy Achil, Iboy Lo Achil could have the same connotation as Rishos, in which case they both have the somewhat ambiguous meaning that minimally they just mean do whatever you want, but perhaps they're relative terms. Meaning that you don't have to, but if you do, it's good. If you don't, we can also tolerate it. So I don't know if it's mukhrach one way. You're right that...
Don't you have to assume that like anything that's not there, like you assume it's not there unless there's a reason to indicate otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, that minhas tam, if I had to flip a coin, I had to pick one way or the other, that seems like the Gemara is not telling me that there's any mitzvah. But there is other data to draw upon. So let me ask you this question next. So the assumption here seems to be that because of the Gra, when it comes to Pesach, we know there's something there. Now, when it comes to Sukkot, we're not sure. Is that so obviously the way you would look at it? Pesach, yes, Sukkot maybe. Is that the only way you see the train running? Yes? Oh, excellent. So this is a point that Rav Olshan discusses, and the Magen Avraham discusses. I think I probably gave this Magen Avraham to look at. That there are some sources that disagree with the Vilna Gaon, and the impact is not necessarily so much that they're disagreeing with the Vilna Gaon, but that they flip the whole question here. Because the Magen Avraham raises the question, as does the Aruch Haner, of why is it that when it comes to Sukkot, we have a bracha, and when it comes to Pesach, we don't. For Sukkot, every day of Sukkot, you go in, you make a bracha. When you go in and eat, you make a bracha. And on Pesach, we don't have a bracha on matzah throughout the rest of Yatzit. So the Magen Avraham quotes the Ma'aril, who says, punk not like the Gra. And he says that because Sukkot, there's a mitzvah throughout. And on Pesach, there isn't. So that's itself interesting. Again, just the question of whether the Gra is accepted or not, or whether the Gra is the only opinion. But the main thing to see here is that we also would have thought that the train should run from Sukkot to Pesach, not from Pesach to Sukkot. Right? If anything, let's ask the question the other way. Now, just parenthetically, while we're on this point of the bracha on Sukkah, so it's hard to give up the opportunity just to mention a very important drush that is a part of YU history. And if you're not familiar with this drush, you should, so we're just going to mention it here. The question of the frequency of brachos on the sukkah could be asked from a couple of directions. So one question is, we make the bracha beyond the first night. Okay, so that's what we're talking about here. But there's also a question of within, let's say, a given day. So we make the bracha possibly several times. Let's say you have breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the sukkah, and in between you go out and do other things. So you'll make the bracha of Leishayv B'Sukkah three times, right? So Tosfos in Maseches Brachos, this is just, again, it's a tangential point, but it's just very worth knowing this, Tosfos in Maseches Brachos and Daf Yud Aleph raises the question that how come it's different than Birchas HaTorah? That when it comes to Birchas HaTorah, so a person gets up in the morning and he recites Birchas HaTorah, and we say a little bit of learning right after that, so the bracha should be connected to the fulfillment of the mitzvah. And maybe we'll get to learn a little bit around Shachar's time, maybe we won't. Let's assume that it's somebody who's not zochet to be in his yeshiva years. Right, so after davening and breakfast, he'll go out to work. Maybe he'll listen to a shtickle shir on the way. Maybe he'll have a little bit more. But he'll stop learning and he'll do other stuff. He'll do computer data entry for a few hours. And then he'll have lunch. Maybe he'll get to go to there'll be a shir in his office. Maybe he'll get a little more if he's lucky. And then he'll go back to work for another few hours. And then when he'll come home, maybe he'll get to go to the Daf Yomi Shir, have night seder maybe. But there's a lot of interruptions in the middle. So how come Birchas HaTorah he makes once, and Birchas HaSukkah he makes several times? You know, the assumption is that all the interruptions in the middle cause him to make a new bracha on Sukkah, but it doesn't do the same for Birchas HaTorah. Are you familiar with this question? Right, so Tosfos asked this question. What does Tosfos say?
You're always supposed to connect to Torah. So it's like
pretty much. Right? The lesson is, you're never mesiach das from Torah. So that's a very beautiful idea. I'd like to believe that's true, but I don't know if tell your boss that if he'll be so happy. Right? What does that mean that you're never mesiach das from Torah? What does that mean practically speaking? So Rav Soloveitchik gave a drasha about this, and again, that's what I was saying before about the YU history. It's worth knowing about this, that there was a journal, it was a soft cover volume that was published many years ago, collecting a number of Rav Soloveitchik's essays and public lectures, and one of them was called Impromptu Remarks at a Siyum, something like that. And that apparently the Rav Shir in this building, they finished learning a parak of Chulin. So they decided to have a shtickel Siyum and a parak of Chulin. And Rav Soloveitchik was asked to speak on the spot. So he said this idea that said that there is latent awareness and that that is also relevant. And he gave the mushal of a mother with a child. If a mother has a baby, a mother has a young child, so some time of the day or a lot of the day she's involved in actively taking care of the child, and sometimes she may not be. The child's asleep, she's doing other things, but she's never not aware of the child. The child is always somewhere in her mind. Sometimes she's very actively involved, and sometimes she's involved in other things, but there's always an awareness of the child. So this is, that's the way the Jew is with Torah also, that there are times when he's actively in shir with an open gemara, he's actively learning, that's one thing. But even when he's doing other things, it's always there, it's always present in his consciousness, and that's what Tosfos means, that when you're asleep, okay, fine, it's a whole machlok, it's a different subject, not for now. Why we make Brachas HaTorah every day? One question is, why do we make it only once a day? The other question is, why don't we rely on yesterday's? Why do we assume that today we need a new bracha that we didn't need yesterday? So that's a discussion, Machlokas Rishonim, what makes us need a new one today. But okay, naniach that we need one once a day, but once a day works because you're always connected to Torah. Okay, so that's part of this question of the frequency of the bracha on a sukkah. But we know that we make a bracha throughout Yontif. So Yerach Lener, Lagan Avram, they raise this question, why is it that we make a bracha on sukkah and not on matzah? So the assumption is there's something more there about sukkah than there is about matzah. So that, you see, that as Revulsion here notes, seems to be a question on the Mishnah Berurah. Why is Mishnah Berurah trying to start figuring out what the story is with sukkah based on matzah? Let's go the other direction. Let's assume that really sukkah is the stronger basis for the mitzvah, and that matzah we have to figure out. So he goes on to discuss here, Rabbi Olshin, that perhaps the question is, how exactly do we relate to the concept of matzah as it impacts on sukkah? And this really goes to Yisrael's question. That Yisrael said before, and I gave him a hard time about it, just establish how do you know this. So what is the story about eating outside of a sukkah? Is the assumption that eating outside of the sukkah is just a bitul aseh? It is a missed opportunity. You could have done a mitzvah and you didn't. Or is it something more than that? Is it a actual iser, so to speak, of some kind? Is it something that is like a kumvase prohibition? Which we've discussed in the past, if you remember, just to go back to the beginning of the year, we discussed it in the context of chinuch, right, that the question of the obligation of a mother and her child vis-a-vis sukkah could be affected by that issue. So if you say, for example, the old Hilni Malka Gemara, if you remember, the idea that a mother may not be obligated in chinuch for her child, maybe that means she's not obligated to train them in positive mitzvos, but maybe to keep them away from losaseh she does have to do, or maybe eating outside of the sukkah is like a losaseh. This concept has come up a few times throughout the year. Now, parenthetically, this is the point that we also want to investigate a little bit more, because Lamaisa, it is a machlokes achronim, and that's what I want to discuss a little bit more tomorrow, that question of what exactly is the story. But for now, let's just deal with it in the abstract. So, it assumes that this is the question, that when it comes to matzah, so we know that matzah is at least one way, right? We know that there is an iser of chametz on Pesach. This is at least how we understand what he's getting at, right? We know that for sure, chametz as a prohibition is a theme of Pesach. So one could easily feel that there is no positive value in eating matzah. It's just that if you want to make a hamotzi, if you want something carbs, then you're going to have matzah, because bread is off the list. But there's no religious value at all to eating matzah, one could think. Right? That the whole thrust here is an iser chametz. So the question is, how should we relate to Sukkot? Right? So one could have said, like we said before, it's a suffix, how to read that Gemara, that rishus, matzah rishus means, yeah, you want to have bread, so have matzah, because you're not going to be allowed to have chametz. But there's no religious value to eating matzah. So that's where the gra comes in, it's machadesh, that no, there is a value. So here too, you could ask the question, so what is the structure when it comes to Sukkot, which goes to this broader question of just how closely related are Sukkot and Pesach. Right? Should we say that really the thrust here is an iser to eat outside of the Sukkot? So you want to eat, so fine, but you're going to have a Sukkot. You don't want to eat, so fine. So once you say that, no, there is punkt a maila in eating matzah, so then there's also a maila in sitting in the sukkah. Now, of course, the bracha part is still going to be a little bit difficult, because the fact that we have a bracha for sukkah and not matzah is still going to provoke the question of why the Mishnah Berurah is coming from where he's coming from, but that's essentially how he understands the nature of the issue. Now, you got a chance to see that the Baal HaMor really should be credited with this question, or should be credited with this position. The position that's attributed to the Gra, really the Baal HaMor seems to have this position. So I know many of you have seen this Baal HaMor, because I had to find it in many different Gemaras with different printings, because just as mentioning this to many guys one on one, which to say it out loud, so I think it was Chavav Meral Fadap Erif, as Baal HaMor was. So different printings of the Gemara have nowadays moved things around. So that's a chaval, because once upon a time we had a common place to find these important things. So the new printings, which add so much clarity in a lot of ways, but they also make it hard to find things. Chavav and Psachim Bavanan, it's okay. So a lot of you had a hard time finding it, because the back of the Gemara has been rearranged, and not in only one way. So there's a couple of different places where it landed, but basically when there's a reference, because this reference system has been around much longer than these new Gemaras, so whenever there's a reference to a Baal HaMor or a Rif or a Ran or anything, Bedape HaRif, so you want to look in these new Gemaras, a lot of times they have two systems running on the top of the page, and to tell you where they're corresponding to. So the one that's corresponding to the whole Masechta, that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for the one that's telling you what it corresponds to in the original Dape Harif. So in any event, if you eventually found the Baal HaMor, so the Baal HaMor raises the question, why do we make a bracha on matzah, why do we make a bracha on sukkah and not on matzah? So what answer does he give? Right? How does he see the difference between matzah and sukkah? So this has been mentioned before, if you recall, that he says, matzah, theoretically, you could get away without ever doing it for the rest of Yantiv. That if you chose to fast, or if you chose to go totally no carbs the entire time, so then you can escape having to have matzah. But when it comes to Sukkot, because sukkahs involves sheino also, so you're not going to be able to go 7 days without sleeping. So mamele, you're going to have to sleep in the sukkah, and you're going to have to do yeshiva sukkah. So what do you think about that answer, Sam?
I mean, that doesn't help us necessarily for today if there is any discouragement.
Maybe, but even without getting into that, it's still interesting, because why is that relevant?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's not chuva, so it seems like a real...
Okay, but let's take that detail aside, because there's a little bit of a distraction. So let's assume that it's all part of the Achila family, but still there's something that's interesting about what he's saying.
Wait, wouldn't you then say that by Mata you should be more likely to make a bracha, because it's, I guess, every time you do it, it's something special versus Sukkah, you have to do it anyways?
Well, but if still that's the mitzvah, so even if you have to do it anyways, but it's a mitzvah, so we can understand maybe why there's a bracha. But what's particularly interesting is, isn't it easier just to answer the question and say there's no mitzvah of matzah? So it seems like the Baal HaMor is really saying the same thing the Gra would be credited with saying later, right? That there is a mitzvah of... there is a mitzvah of matzah the rest of the days. It's just that since you can get away without it, so we don't have a practice to make a bracha on it. But it's a little bit the opposite of what Yisrael was just saying, that sukkah, there's a mitzvah also, and you have to do the mitzvah just because of circumstances. So, which is interesting to where you want to focus on. Do you want to say that it becomes a mitzvah chiyuvis just because... even though it's really a circumstantial mitzvah, but you can't escape without the circumstances, so therefore that makes it more obligatory than matzah. There is something a little funny there, but still, the maisa, that's what it comes out to be. So, but the implication clearly is that by matzah there is a mitzvah. It's just not something you're going to be obligated to do, and that's how he says there's no bracha. So there's a lot that's implied by that Baal HaMor, and that really should get the credit of the Gra's position.
Hi. Does this sort of bring back the conversation we were saying before about how we were discussing whether or not the focus here was because it was like pseudo triumphant, or it was because of sukkahs that the chiyuv comes telling you? So this brings the conversation back to the sukkah itself rather than yom tov, no?
Say it again, that if the sukkah is...
meaning if we're focusing on the sukkah aspect of why you have to eat in the sukkah rather than the yom tov aspect, then this would support that. Because this is like the sukkah is drawing you in for one thing, so like meaning if it's going to draw
again,
you
because the whole shayna, maybe could be. So essentially, these are some of the elements just that Revulsion discusses here, and he notes this Baal HaMor, he notes how they seem to then play against each other. And so therefore the Mishnah Berurah is understanding the Gra that, like we're seeing from the Baal HaMor, that it's not just something that you can do, but it's something that has inherent value to it. He has here a quotation which I want to read to you directly because it's also particularly fascinating. There is some synergy here as well, just back to our Drabbanan topic. The language of the Aruch HaShulchan found very fascinating. So the Aruch HaShulchan understands the following regarding the mitzvah of matzah kol shiva. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, all the words here are very interesting, v'da dekach mekublani, da'afal gav de'ein chovas matzah rak b'layla harishon. This is what I have received, that even though there's only a chiyuv of matzah on the first night, mikol makom mitzvah le'achol matzah kol yimei ha-pesach. Still, there's a mitzvah to have matzah all the days of Pesach. Kidich siv shivas yamim tochlu matzos. Okay, v'ha dekarulu rishus mishum de mitzvah le'gabei chov rishus karulah. So the fact that we call it a rishus is only because it's relative to a chov, and not because it's completely neutral. And now, here, this next phrase is the interesting part.
So he says it's not an obligation.
But that obligation, that we know it's not an obligation, but he's saying that it's more than nothing. That you shouldn't read, like we mentioned before, that this language could be taken as neutral or could be taken as simply not obligatory. So he's saying it's not obligatory, yes, but it's not neutral. It's not just do whatever you want. The only reason we call it Rishus is because of relative to a chova. And here, this is a fascinating line. Mipnei she'ein ze mitzvah saseh, ela ratzon Hashem, she'yochlu b'nei Yisrael matzah, kol yimei ha-Pesach. Now that is a very fascinating idea. Right? So that it could be that it is God's will that you should be eating matzah without it being a direct chiyuv. Right, does this remind you of anything that we did earlier this year?
Like the
Bechanan about Din Drabanan, right? The idea that there is some conveying of the Ratzon Hashem even without an actual chiyuv, that's a very fascinating idea. This is not a very frequent concept that we're saying that even on a deraisa level that we have like this dual message being sent, here's where it's a chiyuv and here's where it's Ratzon Hashem. It's a very fascinating idea. But now to try to put this all into one package. So let me ask you the following. So let's say I were to ask you, what would you think, separate from bringing proofs from sources, proofs from brachos, proofs from comparisons, things like that, just logically speaking, tamei hamitzvos. If I were to ask you, is there a value without a chiyuv, is there a value to eating matzah on the third day of Pesach? And is there a value to purposely going in to have a meal in the sukkah on the third day of Sukkot? How would you answer either question, or would you answer them the same way? What would you think just in terms of tamei hamitzvos? Daniel?
I'd say first Sukkot, it seems to be like the whole nature of Sukkot is that you should treat it as a house, then every time you're going into your Sukkot. So then, I think what we had said before, like,
right.
It's adding, it's making your house, which really, I think, would have value for it.
Okay, so let's take that one at a time. I think you're right. Right, and that's something we mentioned last week when talking about drinking water. Right? We mentioned that such a svara exists that you could say that on the one hand, maybe you would think there's no point in drinking water in the sukkah because the only issue about eating outside the sukkah is when you have a chiyuv to eat in the sukkah, you shouldn't miss that chiyuv. But if there's no chiyuv, then what's the point? But we see that, no, we see that it's considered meshubach, and we mentioned an explanation that, to find hints of this in some svarim, that every extra thing that you do in the sukkah goes toward establishing it as a dira. Right, so the whole idea of teshvu kein taduru, right, the notion that you should treat the sukkah like your house, so as we mentioned, that there could be two ways to understand that. Does teshu kein taduru just mean however you live, do it in the sukkah, whatever you do, do, don't do, it's fine. It's fine. Or no, actively teshu, because teshu will establish your sukkah as a dira. So the more teshuing you do, the better, even if it's not something that you'd be held accountable for if you didn't do it. But there's value in doing it because it brings the sukkah further into realization as a deer. Okay, so that's half of what you were trying to say. So if we're looking at sukkahs by itself, you could see a svara to say that you accomplish something positive by doing that. Okay, now what about matzah?
Well, matzah, it seems that there's, I would say, less. It's like,
okay.
Because it's like, then it's just if you're eating, like, so, hey, you had matzah today. There's also just a lot of it. You're just eating regular and have to be that you don't have any choices.
Okay, so you could certainly have thought that, right? And it certainly seems that there's room to not carry over the logic from sukkahs to matzah. They don't necessarily obviously have that same thing going on. And that maybe when it comes to matzah is just because chametz is off limits. Right? And that's certainly a theme in the Torah. Don't have chametz like that on Pesach. So since chametz is off limits, so therefore you're only going to be left with matzah. But it's not accomplishing anything to have extra meals of matzah, one could think. And that's again where the gra comes in as a chiddush. No, there's something more. Yisrael?
There's also a concept that we have every day of Sefiras and Tzias Mitzrayim, and it seems to be that by Pesach, matzah is equated to that.
Okay.
So maybe that, you know, I guess because you have to do that mitzvah anyways, and by Pesach specifically.
Okay.
Maybe matzah should be done every single day, because that's the whole point of the holiday.
Okay, so then that's telling you something new then. Right, that maybe matzah doesn't only exist as your only alternative when chametz is not there, but that matzah has a positive message. And that positive message, every time you eat matzah, you are contributing to that positive message. So it's not nothing, you could choose to eat or not eat, but you are accomplishing something by having the matzah, because it will further the positive message of Pesach. Apparently not enough to justify a bracha. And here, perhaps the Baal HaMor is best then, because any part of this you could disagree with. So, you know, it's hard to answer up why there might be a distinction from one side to the other, because we just said, for example, just now, two svaras. Are they both true? Maybe not. Maybe one is true, maybe the other one isn't true. So to ask, well, why is there a bracha not by matzah, but yes, by sukkah? So it could be you don't agree with both of these svaras. Maybe they're not necessarily equal, or maybe whatever positive value is contributed by eating matzah doesn't rise to the same level of the positive value that's contributed by teshukein taduru, and by adding to the dira status of the sukkah. It might be that the cleanest way to say it is to say, like the Baal HaMor, that these are essentially comparable concepts, but because you can get away without eating matzah, you can't get away without living in the sukkah, so that just accounts for the bracha discrepancy. But other than that, they really match and they really could fit into the same slots. You see what I'm saying?
Maybe we could also say that I guess, assuming that we're just using the regular mitzvah spirits, tzitzis mitzrayim, daily, that there is no bracha on that when we do it. I guess we do it with the concept of Shema, now we're with not during Pesach.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that since it's a regular mitzvah, we just, on Pesach, we specifically do it with matzah. So it goes back on the daily mitzvah we have, we just do it in a different way, which is why we don't have to rock on it. But by sukkahs, you know, you sit in a sukkah, nobody really knows what you're doing. So we need to add on some special rock.
As opposed to matzah, because why would anyone be eating matzah? So it sounds nice. It's hard to make all that work in pure halachic terms for a lot of reasons. Because first of all, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is its own mitzvah, and matzah is its own mitzvah. It has, like many mitzvahs, it has a component of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. But to say it's the same mitzvah is difficult, especially because we already have to deal with why Sipur and Zechirah are different, and they have their own aspects. And you could also say the same about sukkah, right? The Ma'ayidus are Seichem, he was sukkah so shavti, so to, and we saw half the Rishonim say that's about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it's going to be messy a little bit to try to make things based on that. But I think as we look for umbrella kind of questions, I think that there is a chakira one could ask as follows. I think this probably has hashgafic tamei hamitzvah implications. So I will leave you with this question. I'll pose one more question, which is, I think, directly going to dictate this whole issue. And then tomorrow, we'll fill in that part that I mentioned about trying to see how it actually does play out in terms of sukkah. So we know the following fact. We know that there is a gzeira shava of tesvav tesvav, and that has an impact on sukkahs and an impact on Pesach. And that the nature of that impact is to create two tiers. That in both cases, there's an obligatory phase, that is first night, and then there is a non-obligatory phase, but no alternative, meaning you can't eat bread or eat outside the sukkah, a non-obligatory, but limited phase, for the rest of the yantif, right? That much we know. So that kuyamalo pligi, there is this structure in both cases. But we could still ask the following question. What's the nature of that relationship, those two tiers? On the one hand, you could say that there's only really a affirmative statement to be made on the first night. And for the rest of Yontif, all the Torah wanted from you is that you not contradict that statement. But there's no concept of making an affirmative statement. So in other words, the first night, the Torah wants you to affirmatively show what a sukkah is, that you live in a sukkah. The rest of sukkahs, we don't care if you make any statements, but you can't contradict it. So to eat in your house, that would undermine the statement, that's what is not permitted during this time. But there's no more value of any affirmative statement. Or should we say that no, the whole yontif is about affirmative statement. It's just that the nature of the affirmative statement is somewhat circumstantial, is somewhat dependent on other things bringing it about. And we don't want to leave it just at that. So therefore, the first night, there is an obligation to bring about the circumstances. There's an obligation to have the meal and make sure that statement gets made. And that will cover us in the absence of anything else. But ideally, the statement will be made again and again. So essentially, that seems to be the question we're talking about today. Right? Is it that we want to have matzah as a statement throughout Pesach? But people aren't always hungry, they're not always looking to have bread-like things. So we need to make sure it'll happen at least once, so there's a mitzvah the first night. And then after that, whatever you get to do, you get to do. Or is it no, that really the only affirmative statement is the first night? That's the nature of Tesvav. And all you have to do the rest of Yontif is not contradict it. So therefore, if you choose not to eat anything and you don't contradict it, that's no worse than eating matzah. As long as you're not contradicting the message, there's no difference between not eating at all and choosing to eat matzah. Israel?
But if you're making a bracha on sukkah, then it sounds like it would just be not contradicted.
Right, so that bracha seems to be a relevant piece of evidence. So what do we do with that? Which is what the Magen Avraham and others are bringing into the table, that the fact that there's a bracha on sukkah, so does that answer our question somehow? Or does it answer our question only for sukkahs and not for Pesach? Or somewhere in the middle. So that seems to be the larger question. And it goes a little bit to the Tami HaMitzvah, to the Hashkafah of what exactly is the nature of the mitzvah of Sukkos Teishvu, the nature of the mitzvah of Erev Tochlu Matzos. Are they necessarily connected? Does Tesvav, Tesvav mean they are the same thing? Or do they have inherent differences? So that seems to be the overarching question here. So tomorrow, like I said, tomorrow is scheduled to be our last Gemara slot before we start Chazara. What I would like to just fill in is this question of, that Yisrael took as a pshitas before, of what is the story about eating outside the sukkah? This is a major discussion between the Achronim. So God willing, tomorrow we'll try to fill in that gap. And now we will try to daven. Who wants to daven for us? Dave, want to daven?
Okay.